Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. It is a typical Saturday morning here as I record, though you're probably going to hear this maybe on a Sunday night, maybe on a Monday morning, maybe just online. I had surgery on my left eye this week, so I have a couple weeks of recovery to do, which means I can't do anything strenuous for a while. Sometimes I look at the world around me and kind of see parallels. Are we as a people going through a time that will result in clearer vision after recovery? Hindsight can be helpful too as we move forward. Remember the pandemic? Are you thankful it's over? Well, Brendan Mays in this one is looking to make a buck on plague refugees, and Ken Lane is making his way through that time in this Desert Oracle Radio episode from November 25th, 2020, called A Desert Plaguesgiving.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. It's usually fairly quiet here at Desert Oracle by choice. Not a lot going on. We drive down to the post office every couple of weeks and gather up the mail from the P.O. box. And otherwise, the breaking news is rare. But now and then, everybody's texting and direct messaging and tagging you, and when you finally sit down with a cup of coffee and go through it all, you realize it's all about the same thing. One of those rare times every year or two when a desert story makes headlines around the world. We were speaking with Mr. C. Del Desierto, wildlife biologist in the Southwest, just a couple of weeks ago about his various adventures tracking and counting eagles and other such flying dinosaurs. And one thing he mentioned is how in his profession they use helicopters to get up in the real rough country to see the eagle nests on the canyon walls and so forth. And I was thinking how that's got to be the most disturbing thing to the animals, to have this enormous, hellishly loud, whirly bird circling around so that the bird counters can get a number and see the eggs or the chicks or whatever. But of course, it's better than building a road into the roadless area. And the helicopter is gone after a few minutes, unlikely to be seen again for another season or another year. Now, if you've ever been to Boulder City, maybe you know about the wonderful little city park at the edge of town, just a normal American park with green grass and picnic tables. But if you happen to be there at sunrise, and you happen to be alone and very quiet, and maybe sitting at a picnic table with your coffee and your camera, you might just see a bunch of desert bighorn sheep appear from the dry red hills and gullies, like ghosts they are. I've hiked all over looking for bighorn, and every now and then I'm treated to the sight of a couple in the distance or sprinting up the steep rocky canyon walls because they saw me long before I saw them. But here in this little park, With my vehicle a few yards away in the asphalt parking lot next to the comfort station and the Coke machine, bighorn sheep were everywhere. Huge rams with big cracked horns from fighting, dainty little babies with fresh green grass hanging out of their mouths. A whole herd of bighorn. Now they are understandably jumpy creatures managing their annual migrations from high elevation meadows to the wildflower lowlands in the springtime. Despite the threats of big rigs and rental RVs and everyday distracted drivers, not to mention the equally camouflaged mountain lions that follow the herds looking for stragglers. The first time I witnessed this strange sight of all these desert bighorn in a green lawn community park surrounded by tract homes and bordered by a fairly busy highway, I slowly raised the camera to my eye, and the click of the shutter was enough to scatter a dozen of them. Another group parted and vanished into the dim light, and then I could make out a distant morning jogger headed our way. They weren't always so skittish. Sometimes the herd would wander right down to US 93 and block traffic. Which is certainly their right, it is their land. These grass-fed desert bighorn were fruitful and they multiplied, and they were starting to become pests to the humans, the real pest. It got to the point where Nevada's Department of Wildlife decided to remove half of this huge herd and transfer them by helicopter to Lincoln County, home of the Paranagat Valley, immense desert wilderness. It's not that far, maybe an hour-long flight, but it doesn't sound like a lot of fun being dangled from a helicopter and taken someplace new and strange to you. What I mean is helicopters, as annoying as they are, do serve a purpose in the protection of wildlife. For now, anyway, until the silent solar robotic pterodactyls are put into service next spring. One of those enormous things flaps overhead and you're gonna feel like a hobbit hiding in the bushes, you know? So it was on November 18th that Desert Bighorn conservationists were aboard a Utah State helicopter flying low over what looks like maybe a bit south or east of Canyonlands National Park. Our friend Barney was just out there in the Utah wilderness for his annual month-long trip, roaming around slot canyons and trying to avoid cell service and Wi-Fi. And he thought the area might be Wayne County from the looks of it, but it was hard to tell just from the pictures. And the Utah authorities deliberately withheld the location where they witnessed a strange metal monolith standing straight up from the red earth below. One of the bighorn spotters spotted this gleaming metal monolith instead and shouted for the pilot to take another pass. And there it was, standing all by its lonesome at the end of a small red rock canyon, the sides smoothly eroded as they sometimes are out there. There must have been a good flat place to land nearby, because the pilot set the chopper down close to the strange sight and a couple of people hopped out and made their way to the monolith. If you've seen the pictures, you know that the humans immediately began climbing all over the thing, touching it, gazing in surprise and wonder, just like those apes at the beginning of 2001, A Space Odyssey. Climbing over each other's head and shoulders to try to reach the top of the thing, which is about 12 feet tall. While noting in their media release that it's illegal to install public art or whatever on public lands without permission, which for good reason is rarely granted, the Utah state workers just could not help sharing the pictures and video with the world. And the world was anxious to hear about it. A lot of people who don't care about the desert one way or the other become very excited when anything seemingly out of place appears in the desert. A couple of years ago, this dingbat was trying to raise money from the Flat Earth crowd so he could launch his homemade rocket over Mojave Trail's National Monument. And oh, how the press loved this story. There wasn't much to it, of course. And he did not have permission to crash his rocket into the desert wilderness, but it just struck a nerve. And now the mysterious Utah monolith has been found. As it appears to be constructed of stainless steel or similar sheet metal with visible flat rivet marks, we can probably rule out those ever elusive space aliens. The monolith, in fact, looks very much like the metal sculptures of New Mexico artist John McCracken, the sculptures he called planks. McCracken could not be reached for comment because he died about a decade ago, but maybe if this is his work, its discovery in late 2020 is comment enough. Of course, people on the internet have already pinpointed the location, and somebody even drove out there and posted a selfie. Nobody will leave a good mystery alone. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and I'm your host, Ken Lane. We've got Brendan Mays on the line. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Ken. Thanks for asking. How's everything out in the valley today?
Everything's really pretty nice. You were out here at my place recently, and that was really the best of our fall weather that we'd had so far, and it's just like that today. It's clear and sunny and a little crisp. But it won't be too cold. I know you get real cold up here.
I do have a thin skin, it's been said.
Now, I wanted to ask you about something that was in my email inbox this week. It appears you've started a couple of email newsletters on the, what is it called, Substack? The first one here is about real estate opportunities in the high desert. And I guess let's start with that one. What was your thinking in starting this new email newsletter?
Well, my thinking is always, Ken, my thinking as always is I'm always looking to increase opportunity for the American entrepreneur in any way, shape, or form that I possibly can. And hopefully by turning people on to opportunities and showing them ways so they can make a little bit of money in this government program or this tax break or this set aside, that I can increase that general happiness of the investor class throughout the United States. And so, in essence, what I'm trying to do is bring happiness through financial security and through, of course, great returns on investment for the subscribers to my newsletter.
And how many subscribers do you have since you started?
Well, Ken, we're growing at an exponential rate, I'd like to say, or maybe I want to say logarithmic or logarithmic, or I'm not exactly sure what the exact term is for this explosion in interest. But we started out with maybe 30, and then the next week we went to 90, and the next week after that we were at 380. Gee, it's been 4 weeks now. I think we might actually crack 1,000. It looks like it's growing by leaps and bounds. Very excited about it.
And this is a paid subscription service?
This is a paid subscription service. You subscribe to my service for $20 a month, and you get the newsletter. You can get, well, of course, there are various levels you can sign up for. As you know, Ken, it's very important that people feel like they're spending just the right amount of money for just the right amount of product. And so what we've got is we've got a multiple tier class for people to buy in, depending on how much of the good stuff they want to get, how much of the personal handholding. We've got levels starting, of course, at the Bronze Club. We got $20 a month. You get the newsletter. You get any sort of promotional emails we might be sending out, any sort of tips like that, easy stuff. The next level you got, of course, what's the next precious metal? It's silver. Now, at the silver level, you'll be getting my Wednesday winners. When you get into the Silver Club, you get the Wednesday winners. The Wednesday winners are little insights that I have after speaking to various county supervisors and local tax franchise board attorneys and all the little insider tips that I get from just talking to people, you know? So the next level, of course, is the gold level. And the gold level is not actually the gold standard because there's one past that. That's the platinum plan. Everybody knows platinum. That's the metal, you know, and the catalytic converters that they cut off your cars. It's worth a lot of money. So the platinum level is where all the real good stuff happens. But let's go back to the gold level.
Let's talk just for a moment about the listings that you're putting in here. Now, you're doing this through your brokerage, which is commercial only, if I'm correct.
Yes, that's right. Mojave Mirage Commercial Investment Realty Corporation.
Now, this first one, you say, is a perfect city plague escape. And this looks like 1.74 acres. This is up on Yucca Mesa. And you say that it's rehab ready, but it looks like it's just a slab here. Is there any structure?
Well, Ken, the structure is the infrastructure. It's all the stuff that's there that lets you build what any sort of improvements that you'd like to the property. So in terms of structure, well, I guess you'd have to say that that giant slab is part of the structure, although I'd say it's infrastructure, along with, of course, we got water, we got the city sewer hookup going to it, we got electricity running out there, all the utilities are in place, and yeah, there's a giant slab out there that's in very sound, solid condition that you could build whatever you want on top of it. You could build a go-kart track if you're into go-karts. You could build a skateboard ramp if you got kids who like skateboard, or you could build a giant palatial estate overlooking the entire valley. It's a really choice piece of property, Ken.
How many of these, what you're calling plague refugees, are you seeing coming into the high desert?
The plague that has descended upon our major, I hate to say it, Democrat-run cities on the West Coast, all over the country, has been horrible. Mismanagement, lockdowns, reaching into people's Thanksgiving turkey and ripping out the stuffing so they can just feed on it, and then they're taking your cranberry sauce, they're telling you how much gravy you can put on your potatoes. People are sick of it. They're sick of this government overreach and intrusion. Intrusion and even into their turkey. It's pretty disgusting when you think about it, Ken. So we got a lot of people who are just basically fed up and frustrated with these elite bureaucrats who think they know better telling you how to live your life. So we're offering people the opportunity to live in a much more free environment. We're seeing thousands and thousands of people moving out of the cities and coming out here to the valley to enjoy the fresh air, the friendly people, the relaxed atmosphere. I'm telling you, Ken, it's a giant winner.
You're inviting investors to also make their own homes here. And your pitch is that while there are still some COVID-related regulations out here in the rural desert, you say that there aren't enough people to enforce them.
Well, Ken, anytime you get to the edge of the county, you run into a lot of strange things. Some people might think these strange things are bad. Lots of parolees trying to stay away from schools and places where they're banned. A lot of people trying to get away from the intrusion and overreach and the long arm of the law even. So, you know, of course, at the edge of the counties, the wind kind of blows the chaff out and it stacks up against the fence of the far end of the counties. But among all that detritus and riffraff, you also get a lot of freedom-loving folks who do not want to be chained up, don't want to be locked up, don't want to serve their terms, don't want to see their parole officer, don't want to have the law to have anything to do with their lives, basically. So if you crave that sort of freedom from authority or that freedom from authoritarianism, is what I'm trying to say, well, then you can come out here and you can be as free as you basically want to be. And let's face it, San Bernardino County is not the richest county. They're going to be concentrating most of their efforts in the cities in San Bernardino City and the other places where they're going to have to, where there's more concentration of population. You get more bang for your police bang stick buck. You know what I'm saying? So when you come out here to the edge of the county, they don't have the resources. They don't have the officers. They don't have the building and safety inspectors. They don't have the fire department inspectors checking up to see how your fire suppression system is, or even if you have one, you can get away with a lot of stuff out here. And that's part of the beauty, part of the charm, part of the draw. And that's what we're trying to sell here, Ken. Freedom.
Now, you yourself are not in the area for the Thanksgiving holidays, but I see here on the newsletter that you are hosting, or I guess your company is hosting, a socially distanced Thanksgiving all-night party on Friday night. Is that correct?
Ken, that is a private party. If it were to happen, I mean, I'm not even saying we're going to have a Thanksgiving shindig or anything. I'm just saying that's a private event. This is not a public thing. How did you find out about this?
It's at the bottom of the email. It says, if you'd like an invite to our Friday real estate community cocktail party and Thanksgiving blowout, and there's the RSVP link.
She wasn't supposed to put that. A lady in charge of our marketing, she's a sweet girl, real smart. She's finishing up her last year of high school. She's really a great gal. She's going to be going to Cuesta. Now, that was supposed to be something just between us and the platinum level investors. Which is a select group, a small group of people. This is not like some giant shindig, Ken. These are pre-selected people who I'm sure are taking all the necessary precautions to be as safe as possible. Everybody, we're wearing masks and all that stuff. We'll be not sitting on top of each other like the governor did. We're not going to be going to some expensive Spanish laundry or something. We're not going to be doing anything like that. It's going to be a small affair with friends, Ken.
So
platinum-level friends.
It says here that attendance is limited to the first 100 respondents. So,
well, Ken, like I said, Crystal, she's young. She's 17. She's finishing up her final year of high school. She's a daughter of a friend. One of my early investors, one of my angels, as you could say. And, she got something wrong. She got it backward. And, you know, it's all her fault. But that's okay because she's young. And she's not here right now. Here, let me take a look at this. Hold on for a second.
It's the one with the subject line that says, irresistible opportunity for plague refugees.
Oh, God, that doesn't help at all. I got 50 like that.
Let's move on.
That's plague. Okay, I got a lot of plague thinker. I didn't realize that. Yes, Ken?
Let's talk about this other interesting property. Now, this looks like it was a former...
Ken, are you interested yourself in investing? It sounds like...
I'm always interested in what's going on in the high desert. And as you know, you get out here and you talk to somebody at the gas station to say hello, and they want to talk real estate. It's a hot market.
Well, that sounds like all of Southern California, doesn't it? Geez, for the last 40 years, that's all anybody wants to talk about. And you know what? I want to talk about it, too.
Well, this property...
So go ahead and ask me some questions.
Sure,
I'm running on with mouth, Ken.
No. It's always good to have you on the program. This property is described as a 18-bed senior care facility, former, and apparently they lost their license, and so you're marketing this as a ready-to-go young professional compound.
We're not exactly sure how this one's going to pan out. As you know, Ken, that for the former assisted care living facility known as Adobe Falls, the retirement community up there on the hill out there, as you know, there's been a surprisingly large amount of vacancies opening up in nursing homes around the country. And due to the unfortunate circumstances that we've just gone through, but it's with all of these unexpected vacancies popping up, a lot of them are not getting the government support that they had before to keep these places open, because you can't be receiving your benefits. I mean, unless you live in Pennsylvania or something, Philadelphia, you're not going to be getting benefits for being dead. Adobe Falls is out of business. And we saw a wonderful opportunity here. We know a lot of people are having trouble coming up with the capital just to come down with 20% on a $700,000 home somewhere. It's kind of tough to make that. But if you go tenancy in common,
and you get a bunch of young people together who can pool their money and pool their resources, they can get together and buy into a place like this, you know? They can all move in, and they can share a cable bill, and they can share everything, and they can, it can be just like living like they did in college before. Except now, of course, there's this legal document that ties them all together, and if they end up hating each other, well, let's not talk about that, because that's 5 to 7 years down the road. But right now is a tremendous opportunity for these people to buy in to a real estate market that shows no signs of slowing down ever. It just keeps getting hotter and hotter.
Now, one of the strange things about it is you say that it has a on-site crematorium.
So we were thinking with the on-site crematorium because we were thinking maybe we could repurpose it because, you know, a lot of people are interested in the handcraft arts. And there's a big arts and crafts movement coming back. And, you know, a lot of the people that are into that movement who are living in the metro areas are forced out by rising costs. Why? Well, they're moving out here. This place is filled with artists, filled with creative people and sculptors. So we were thinking that perhaps we could repurpose this crematorium as more of like something to fire pottery in. So instead of, you know, reducing human bodies to piles of charred and broken bone, we'd be taking a broken and charred pieces of clay and turning them into beautiful works of art. It's kind of a wonderful, you know, a flip on the idea of a crematorium to turn it into a giant, maybe a pottery factory. That's one of the ideas that we're exploring, Ken. Maybe have some sort of a pottery community.
Here at the Desert Oracle Institute, research is our passion, as we like to say. And I was doing some research the other night about the mass extinction event of 66 million years ago, and it was something that just sort of filled me with a kind of comic joy. So I want to tell you about this in case you don't already know. And you might already know, especially if you're a biologist, and I guess especially if you're a bird biologist. Just picture this scene in your mind, this scientific fact. Prior to the mass extinction, 66 million years ago, ducks and chickens coexisted with their famous dinosaur cousins. Just imagine that, any dinosaur scene you can conjure up in your mind. Some kind of brontosaurus grazing in Utah, maybe the Tyrannosaurus Rex charging in and biting off the herbivore's head, drinking the blood right out of the neck, and down below, the ducks are waddling around, quacking, while the chickens peck around in the dirt. Oh, it's just a delightful thing to imagine. Maybe they all fluttered away in a great nervous hurry, the way our Gamble's quail do when the coyotes come by, the way the chickens all hide when the desert fox comes a-creepin'. But unless the big dinosaurs routinely ate the very little ones, the chickens and such, the turkeys, these poultry dinosaurs would have no reason to fear them. Like regular birds hanging around elephants or whatever, the concern is to avoid getting underfoot. Maybe the ducks would be honking and doing their antics while the fearsome Utah raptors ran around. The Utah raptors were faster and smarter than the tyrant king, T-Rex. It would really change the mood in almost any dinosaur movie to have chickens and ducks and turkeys all running around nervously or obliviously. This has been Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Soundscapes on the program by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, at 95.9 FM. Well, as I said, it's a typical Saturday morning out here as I'm recording. You might be able to hear the Clark's Nutcrackers around me and the Jets. overhead and the road noise from I-90. Well, anyway, it is what it is, right? Well, next up, we have another Thanksgiving time reflection. This one is about turkeys and another wild bird that we also have here in Montana. It was produced by Ken Lane on November 23rd, 2022. And I think he speaks truth. Think about this one, and think about protecting and restoring sagebrush habitat right here.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and it's just one of those moments in time. Moments in history. When the world is shaking off all kinds of stuff that no longer has a will to exist. It's cyclical, but nobody knows where we are in the cycle and which cycle. It becomes a little more clear about 15 years on the other side. All we know for certain is that these are the days of the turkeys. Which is an insult to turkeys, really. Benjamin Franklin said this about the turkey in a letter to his daughter Sarah, preserved in the National Archives. For my own part, I wish the bald eagle had not been chosen as the representative of our country. He is a bird of bad moral character. He does not get his living honestly. The turkey is, in comparison, a much more respectable bird and, withal, a true original native of America. Eagles have been found in all countries, but the turkey was peculiar to ours. The first of the species seen in Europe being brought to France by the Jesuits from Canada and served up at the wedding table of Charles IX. He, the turkey, not Charles IX, he is besides, though a little vain and silly, 'tis true, but not the worst emblem for that. A bird of courage, and would not hesitate to attack a grenadier of the British Guards who should presume to invade his farmyard with a red coat on. The proud cousin of the turkey is, of course, our own greater sage grouse. Vain and silly is one way to describe the fantastic mating rituals of our sage grouse. But you could describe the entirety of human mating dances with the same words, vain and silly. Now all we need is courage. And we can be a bit more like the greater sage grouse. There were something like 16 million sage grouse in America only 100 years ago. Within Joe Biden's lifetime, just incredible to think about. So why do we only have a 250,000 or so sage grouse living in the wild today? Because there's not enough wild, that's why. In states like Kansas and Nebraska, where millions of sage grouse once cavorted and danced, fought off the coyotes and the ravens who were always trying and often succeeding and stealing the eggs from the ground nests and eating the young. Well, in states like Kansas and Nebraska, The sagebrush and grasslands ecosystem is all but gone. No sagebrush plains, no greater sage grouse. The answer to the problem is the answer for everything. Restore the habitat wherever we can. Up on the American Prairie Preserve, the most ambitious rewilding effort in the USA at the moment, sage-grouse is rightly understood as a living symbol of a healthy, wild sagebrush habitat. You know it when you see it. Everything's alive. Pronghorn racing through the grasslands. Mountain lion and wolf and prairie wolf. That's what we call the coyote before adopting its ancient Nahuatl moniker. Rewilding is the easiest and most enjoyable work because it's not really work at all. Let it be. See what comes back all on its own. Be amazed. And as I proposed to Joshua Tree National Park officials about a decade ago, get a bunch of solar-powered, weed-eating robots wandering the lands where the invasives have taken advantage of diminished habitat. Did I mention this other enormous bird, this enormous woodpecker that's living up in the eaves on the backside of this strange old house I call home? It's a northern flicker, and it sleeps hanging onto the stucco, pushed up by the eaves. I mean, I could pretend to be Dr. Edward Yeager and sneak up and grab the sleepy cold bird and rectally measure its temperature if I was so inclined in the service of science. But having been so delighted at first seeing this enormous woodpecker grabbing all the early fall monsoon bugs hiding up there in the eaves and the little cracks in the old stucco, and welcoming this migratory flicker bird, now I'm careful not to make any noise when I go out back, because this flying dinosaur goes into such a panic when woken. But I do wonder, does the northern flicker go into nightly torpor, clinging up there totally upright in the near-freezing night, the absolute worst way to sleep that I can imagine? Should I maybe commit science for the sake of knowledge or whatever? No, I should not. Let the bird be, for God's sake. Such a dramatic bird seems to mean something, settling here just outside my bedroom for the first time since I've lived in this place many years now. Does it mean something? Should I commit augury? The ancient art of prophecy derived from witnessing the behavior and arrival and departure of birds? I hold my breath and look it up on the internet. Meaning of northern flicker. What kind of mad nonsense will I find? Plucked from all kinds of unreliable sources. Here are some alleged Native American meanings, but which tribe, which part of the Americas, and where did this information come from? The flicker does show up fairly often with dragons in ancient Chinese art, says one website. The brilliantly colored and very hardy bird is called, quote, resilient, courageous, and overwhelmingly positive, on another website. This one, a bird-watching website. Self-love, says another one. Creative force, independence, on another one. I bet they all say the same stuff about anything you look up. A giant centipede in your bath towel represents freedom and success, etc. This is the first bird to take shelter here since the fledgling red-tailed hawk spent an afternoon with me a couple of years ago. with me because I was out there with it scaring off the wicked ravens on the roof. After the fledgling hawk dive-bombed out of the pine tree nest of its parents. What do you mean, great speckled bird hanging awkwardly off the stucco every night now? We feel weird because it's a weird time and we like to keep track of everybody else feeling weird, everybody else losing their minds. But it is why, of course, the artists and the oddballs and those touched in the head have always been drawn to the desert wilderness. To the wild places. The frontier for the modern American living in the western and southwestern U.S. is pretty much just beyond the last suburban development and gravel pit and outlet mall and logistics, trucking, and rail complex at the interstate crossroads. Keep going till you see it or until you don't see any of that. Don't look back or you'll turn into a pillar of salt. Which will be used by Caltrans to melt the snow on the Sierra highways. For the past couple of years, I've been reading The White Goddess by Robert Graves. I've probably mentioned it, and if not, I have often mentioned the entity herself. Known by so many names around the world. The Spanish Lady of Route 66. La Llorona. The Queen of the Universe. The Madonna. Isis. Selene. Lacathia. Diana. The Triple Goddess. The Goddess of the Moon. Cybele, the Wild Goddess with her ever-present lion. Sekhmet, who was both goddess and lion, etc. and etc. Everywhere around the world since the beginning of our species. It's a big book, 500 pages in the trade paperback version that I've got, but people used to breeze through 800-page Harry Potter books in a weekend. Some books are page turners, some books are sacred texts. A little at a time, especially when you've got to consult your own bookshelves about every paragraph or two, and then reluctantly look online for the stuff you can't find at home. Reluctantly because you know in your heart that most of the results will be about forgotten entertainment industry attempts to generate lucrative intellectual property from the religions and mythologies that haven't already been rounded up and branded by Disney and Marvel. So you're looking for the intersections between a couple of Near East gods from 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, and instead the top result is a 2014 Wikipedia for a minor character in some dumb TV show that was canceled after two seasons, and it says something like, Cadmos is a junior magician at the Academy of Magic Software in Sky Valley. Played by Dylan Whitney Semaphore in season one and Taylor Wimsom Munez in the season two finale, when Cadmos is elected school board president of the Cloneverse. And then you just shut the computer and go outside. I've used the White Goddess, or it has used me, as an oracle these past few years. Sometimes I just open it up and dive in. Oh, here's a 40-page section on the interrelationship of Celtic and Phoenician tree worship as coded alphabet. And half the text is in Greek. Great. But all the while, the tattered City Lights bookmark has made its slow forward progress. I read a page or two at a time. Skipping over nothing at this point because it's the closing argument. And if you're the kind of creature who listens to radio shows like this one, then it might just make perfect sense to you. Quote, The confirmed townsman is informed of the passage of the seasons only by the fluctuations of his gas and electricity bills, or by the weight of his underclothes. The one variety of religion acceptable to him is a logical, ethical, highly abstract sort which appeals to his intellectual pride and sense of detachment from wild nature. The goddess is no townswoman. She is the lady of the wild things, haunting the wooded hilltops. And though the townsman has begun to insist that built-up areas should have a limit, his intention is only to urbanize the country, not to ruralize the town. The last vestiges of the ancient pagan celebrations of the mother and son are being obliterated.
I think it's time. Has anyone decided that? Oh, I see people looking at each other. It's always this part. It's either should I or usually you should. Come on up and tell a story on Desert Oracle Radio.
Work as a backpacking guide for a summer camp up in the Western Sierras in Huntington Lake. And this was a local story, and the kids used to tell each other the story all the time. But the story is that they were testing B-52 bombers for some sort of military aircraft in the area. And one winter, right before the lake froze over, one of the planes crashed into the lake. And this is a real thing. Like, a plane actually did crash into the lake. You can find YouTube videos of them going through the wreckage. But the lake froze over, they didn't recover the body. And then in the spring, when they recovered the body, they pulled the corpse out of the water and his skin slipped off of him like butter. And they used to call him the Butter Man. And they said that if you went walking around the Kaiser National Forest near Huntington Lake at night, you might run into him, and he was just muscle and eyeballs and no skin. And this kept the kids in bed every night. That's the story.
Did you ever come across anyone who thought they had experiences themselves?
Everyone has stories about seeing the Butter Man, but there are much weirder things in Huntington Lake. There's underground cockfighting rings. There are abandoned Boy Scout camps with cryptic symbols carved into them. It's real weird up there.
Well, what's the best campground to go up there and check this out?
Oh, wow. Well, camping up near Mono Hot Springs is great. Driving through Big Creek and seeing the hydroelectric project is great. There's a lot of great backcountry camping up around
there. Now, Big Creek had a Sasquatch some years ago.
Did they?
Yeah, there was a supposedly fake U.S. Forest Service flyer that was up at the campground.
Oh yeah, one. They've been tagging Widowmakers up there for a few years now. It's pretty bleak. So yeah.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna have to get up there maybe for Christmas.
A lot of, yeah. That's a great place to get snowed in.
Oh, thank you so much. It's the Butter Man. We can do one more if somebody wants to do one. I can see all this, you know, up here. I I couldn't pick you out of a police lineup, but... You gotta follow up the butter man.
All right, follow the butter man. Two quick ones. Both my grandpas passed away on April Fool's Day, 10 years apart to the day, and I thought it was a prank both times. In 99, I was playing
basketball. Was it the death itself or the news of it?
The news of it. I thought I was having my leg pulled both times. 99, playing basketball with my brother up front. My dad comes out and says, "Grandpa passed," and I went, "April Fools!" And in 2009, I was in college, and I was having an argument with my girlfriend at the time, and my brother called, and he's like, dude, you're not gonna believe this. You're not gonna believe this, my grandpa died. And I was like, oh, dude, now's not the time for a prank. So I was kind of, and then he called back, and I don't know what, like, spooky math that is, but yeah, 10 years apart today.
That's pretty good. And have you followed numerology at all since then?
No, and that's not really in my, I haven't. I never really have, no. That's the only one that I have in my personal life.
When is the next April Fool's?
It was 2019. It was 99, 09, and 2019. So luckily nothing happened on that one.
So you're clear.
I'm in the clear. Exactly.
That's weird. Did anybody mention that at their funerals or anything?
No. Just sort of this, like, strange little personal thing that I hold, like, a little bit of shame over, thinking it was a joke both times. It is a little embarrassing, but, I just, what are the odds of that, you know?
It's nice that you still think of them both, huh?
Yeah. And then on the Boy Scout trail, I once saw a little floating white Tic Tac. That wasn't a plane, it wasn't a military test. It was a floating white Tic Tac, and then it disappeared. You know how old TVs used to turn off? The little, like, blip in the
middle? Yeah.
It did that. It kind of, like, curled up on itself.
Was it close to you?
No, way, way high up there on the Boy Scout trail in the Joshua Tree.
Oh, that Boy Scout trip.
Yeah. The one that leads to Obey Yo-Yo if you go far enough. I was on my way back listening to Richard Pryor's wife talk on a podcast.
As one does.
Yeah.
In the wilderness.
Exactly. I poked my foot on something sharp, and I realized I should be looking up. And I looked up, and it was just a little white hanging Tic Tac that furled in on itself. And there were planes around, traveling up like planes do, and it wasn't that. So.
People go there and they see stuff. Thank you so much. Those are good. We want to hear from you on April 1st, 2029. Put it on my calendar here. Oftentimes with these weird stories, these encounters with the others, there's a message, a moral. People come back with a purpose, maybe, with an understanding. Sometimes they become intensely committed to environmental causes. This was something that the Harvard head of psychiatry, Dr. John Mack, discovered when he treated dozens of people in the late 80s and the 1990s who claimed that they had had abduction experiences. Not just abduction experiences, very detailed things, including these stories that are common to the fairy world, the fae, the fair folk and stuff, such as changelings, such as children swapped out for the children of these other entities. Sometimes people just go nuts, it's true. But we probably hear more about that than those who have a new purpose, a quiet determination. moments of transcendence, like Ralph Emerson said, were available to all of us in wild nature and wilderness, deserts, mountains, seashores. The founders of every world religion experienced something like this, and they became so transformed that they changed their own societies and, in many cases, the lives of millions or even billions of people that would live far after their time.
Think about that. His intention is only to urbanize the country, not to ruralize the town. The last vestiges of the ancient pagan celebrations of the mother and son are being obliterated. Despite a loving insistence on green belts and parks and private gardens, there seems no escape from our difficulties until the industrial system breaks down for some reason or other, as it nearly did in Europe during the Second World War. And nature reasserts herself with grass and trees among the ruins. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness and beyond, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree on our home station, KCDZ 107.7 FM. And on your home station, if you're listening elsewhere tonight, KZMU-FM in Moab and the Castle Valley on Saturday nights at 9 p.m., for instance. I just got back to Joshua Tree from Moab, and oh, how I love it there. Moab, I mean. Doing some work there, talking about the important stuff, you know. Green River, too. That whole strange and magical and baffling part of the world, Moab to the Maze, Canyonlands to Capitol Reef. Thanks to everybody who came out for the KZMU fundraiser, where we all froze to death or died trying. And for coming out to the Grand County Library for the reading, signing, etc., hosted by Cosmo the Library Cat. Well, that's true. You can look that up. It's Thanksgiving time, and I hope your Thanksgiving is a good one. They don't let us have barely any kind of festivities in the 2020s, down to Christmas to New Year's and Thanksgiving week, and the permanent grind called America. So do yourself a favor and don't rob yourself of the only couple of festival weeks left in the American corporate calendar. Thanksgiving is not an endorsement of anything beyond you and your people if they're around, taking a breather, appreciating and enjoying this moment in your lives. Good night from the voice of the desert.
I don't ignore the news that comes along, but I try to balance it off with things I'm grateful for, like the sagebrush habitat around here, the birds that show up at my feeders, the big ones soaring on the thermal updrafts on a blue sky day, and the moose, deer, fox, weasel, and elk that have managed to escape from hunters and trappers. Well, thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to KGVM Bob Hall and all the KGVM volunteers and all that support its mission. Thanks to the Bozeman Daily Chronicle for not being afraid to print bold articles. And thanks to you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the KGVM.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams. Happy Thanksgiving.